This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
And welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, along with my buddy and partner, Big Ed Davis. Thank you very much for tuning in to us this Monday morning. August the 15th, we're halfway through the month. Holy Toledo. In a few minutes, we are going to be talking with Ryan Young of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We're going to talk about what he sees as reasons for optimism on the inflation front. Yeah. Positivity on the inflation front. Let's find out what he thinks based on the, by the way, the Consumer Price Index. So maybe it bodes well. We'll find out. And the FBI may have grabbed some privileged information, attorney-client privileged information in that raid on Donald Trump's home. Now, are they going to hand it back? Are they going to go through it? Meantime, the Justice Department is against an independent review on what was taken. I mean, they went in there and they took everything they could get their hands on, it looked like. Are they allowed to do that? Are they allowed to literally go in and look for anything? Or do they need to have some sort of pinpoint on what they were looking for? We are going to talk about that. We're going to take a look. And it is 1 year after the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. We are going to take a look at that. We're going to take a look back. We're going to talk about whether or not it could have been handled better. So stay tuned for that as well. And in our ultimate top 10, I find this one to be kind of interesting. The top 10 heaviest presidents. I don't know if it's when they entered office or when they left office or in the middle of the office or whatever. But apparently we figured out that the heaviest presidents, we're going to tell you who they are. By the way, don't forget to listen to Senior Voice America, right? Monday through Friday they're on here, 8 to 10 a.m. Tim Bryce and company always do a wonderful job. Stay tuned for them on the Tan Talk Radio Network again. So we got a lot of things, as usual, going on. And 1 year ago, the Afghanistan war, or at least America's involvement in the war, came to a brutal and abrupt end as we tried to get out of there. But we left all kinds of people there. Remember, we decided we were going to take the military out before the civilians? I don't know how that was ever figured out. But Marine veteran Chad Robichaud, who was on the ground helping to evacuate Americans, was on TV this morning, Fox and Friends, and he recalled what many critics called Biden's botched withdrawal after the U.S. left the nation. Here's what he said. I think the president's advisors had advised him not to do this. He chose to do it anyway for whatever motivation is still unknown a year from this happening. He said everyone who had been to Afghanistan, who was aware of any kind of military strategy, was like, this place is going to fall in the next days or weeks. That's why myself and the team that we put together acted the way we did and responded, because we knew it was going to happen. Remember when they had a better airport that they were defending better, and they left that airport and they tried to go to the main airport where all of the Taliban was hanging around? Remember all of that? I've never heard a reasonable explanation for why they didn't try to funnel people out of the airport that they had, that they were, I think it was the Basra airport or something like that, that they had a better handle on. I can't remember the name of the particular airport. Now, Robichaud served 8 tours in Afghanistan. He's the co-founder of Save Our Allies. It's a group dedicated to rescuing Americans trapped behind enemy lines. Apparently, we still got quite a few Americans over there. And we had a lot more over there at the time than the Biden administration was willing to admit when we left. He says the State Department did announce on July 18th a number that indicated how many of our allies were there. So the applicants, which are our interpreters that fought with us for 20 years, they number about 74,000 people. So this is one of the things that Biden, I don't think, wants to bring up too much these days. I don't think Democrats like to talk about it, but it is being talked about. There'll be a spin on it, of course, from the Biden administration. We'll see if the administration even brings up the fact that it's been a year. In the meantime, the FBI seized boxes containing records apparently covered by attorney-client privilege out of Trump's home. Now, that's kind of scary. I mean, are they going to be allowed to go through that now? Boxes with attorney-client privilege information? And apparently the Justice Department has opposed a lawyer's request from Trump for the appointment of a special master, an independent special master, to look over the records. In other words, so the FBI doesn't get the chance to go through it and start reading things that might be privileged information. So what a mess this is. The FBI seized classified records during its unprecedented raid a week ago today, apparently including some marked as top secret. But Trump is disputing the top secret classification, saying that the records had been declassified. Now, that's where the rub is. How does a president declassify them? Do you wave a magic wand and say, okay, everything I just carted out of here is declassified? I think you have to have a special way of doing that. I'm not sure what it is. But he is the top guy in the executive department, and at the time he left, he was still president. So he has a little bit more, whatever you want to call it, jurisdiction over those things that he was taking out. So anyway, I don't know where all of this is going, but look at Senator Rand Paul. He's upset about it. He wants a repeal of the Espionage Act following the raid. He said the Espionage Act, which is one of the things that they could try to levy against Trump. He said the Espionage Act was abused from the beginning to jail dissenters of World War I. It's long past time to repeal this egregious affront to the First Amendment. Here's what Trump said about the documents taken out of his home. Number one, it was all declassified. Number two, they didn't need to seize anything. They could have had it any time they wanted without playing politics and breaking into the home. It was a secured storage with an additional lock per their request. They could have had it any time they wanted, and that includes long ago. All they had to do was ask. He said the biggest problem is, what are they going to do with the 33 million pages of documents, many of which are classified, that Obama took to Chicago? I guess they don't care about those. But anyway.
You know, when this happened a week ago, I think we said that the American public, I think, in most part, believed that this better be a slam dunk by the FBI. And I don't think it's anywhere close.
Oh, no.
If they have to question what is national security and which ones are love letters to Melania, and have an independent read it, come on.
I know. It's a fishing expedition. I think it's... And then why did they wait to do it so close to the November
and
elections?
And your intelligence was so good that you had to bring in a safe cracker to a safe that had nothing in it.
Right. Do you remember when Geraldo Rivera did the
live thing?
The opening of the Al Capone?
Womp, 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 womp. Turn that
the
camera.
Only thing I remember him coming out was with a half broken bottle of beer.
Yeah.
That was about the only thing.
I remember saying, turn that camera off.
Okay, let's take our break. We're going to talk a little bit about, this is kind of interesting. Ryan Young is going to join us, and we're going to talk about what he sees as reasons for optimism on the inflation front right now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets. From animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Mustang Sally. Hey, we are back on a Monday, and we thank you so much again for listening in. Well, Democrats are all excited that they passed this so-called inflation adjustment bill, or whatever they call it. They wouldn't say exactly when they believe the legislation will actually start cutting inflation, but they maintain it will, especially on the energy and healthcare fronts. It's the Inflation Reduction Act. They're going to tout it now, of course, going into the November elections as one of the Biden achievements. The bill would raise over $700 billion, with a B, in tax revenue and spend more than $400 billion in doing so. But a lot of people don't think it's going to have much effect. Even Bernie Sanders, of all people, he said it would have very little, if any, effect. When confronted, these Democrats that are talking about how it's going to lower inflation started to stumble a little bit and would not specify exactly when the inflation reduction would take effect. Well, we're delighted to have Ryan Young join us, an old buddy. He's a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and he focuses on things like regulatory reform, trade policy, and antitrust things. And Ryan, as usual, welcome back. So you have written a piece that is on the website right now for CEI about how we might have reason for cautious optimism on this bill. Is that true?
Yeah, it's actually not because of the bill, which is going to have pretty much zero effect on inflation, but it's based instead on what the Federal Reserve has been doing. When they do something, there's generally a lag time, 6 to 18 months usually, which varies wildly, and which means we're lined up right now with the worst of what the Fed was doing during COVID. When the virus hit, they grew the money supply by a third, while real output since then has only grown by about 4%. When you have that kind of massive imbalance between how much money there is in circulation versus how much actual stuff is being produced in the economy, that's where you get your inflation. The vast majority of today's inflation is because the Fed made that mistake during COVID. They overdid their stimulus efforts. And now, a year and a half later, we're lined up with the worst of what they did, so that should be passing. And we're starting to see that now with the numbers starting to come down. There are lots of other things going on with oil prices and supply chain problems, but the fundamentals of monetary policy are finally pointing in the right direction.
So you do think that we might be able to see a gradual easing of inflation? Now, I know we've seen it in gas, like you mentioned. We have seen it in some other products, but mainly it doesn't seem like food products and the like seem to continue to go up. But should we be optimistic?
In the long run, yes. When oil prices went up after Putin invaded Ukraine, and they're coming down now as people adapt, that's not inflation. That has a whole separate cause, which means it has separate solutions. So even though that stuff shows up in CPI, that's actually not inflation. So we need to treat that differently. It's a completely different animal.
Mm-hmm. And of course, CPI is the consumer
inflation.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Paul.
No. I just wanted to just say, when you say CPI, we were talking about the consumer price index for goods and services. Go ahead. I didn't want to interrupt you, though. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Thanks. CPI is the main measure of inflation that the Fed uses a different one, but that's the main one that the news media uses. That's finally pointing in the right direction. And the other bit of good news is that when the Fed finally pumped the brakes on its money creation spree in March, we're about lined up, or at least we will be soon, with the six-month mark, which is where that might start taking effect. So the numbers are starting to go down now because we're seeing now the long-term effects of what the Fed did a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we might start soon seeing the positive effects of them finally starting to do the right thing starting in March.
So
inflation is going to be high into next year no matter what. But I think we might have seen the worst of it.
Well, that would be good news. So in other words, it will continue to come down. Now, the Fed, by raising the rate on borrowing money, it's their way of reducing the actual spending of dollars. And when we reduce the actual spending of dollars, products that are not being purchased, the people that create those products will, by necessity, lower the price to make that product more attractive. In other words, fewer dollars chasing more goods, right?
That's what they hope is happening. we'll see
if it really happens. So let's get on to energy again. Energy prices have definitely dropped, and everybody, I guess, on the Democratic side is touting that fact, and I guess trying to credit the Democrats themselves. But let's look at this inflation bill. I mean, you mentioned, I think, it's probably not going to do much good. I'm wondering if it will actually create more inflation. It's more government spending. It's a lot more government spending. They claim they're going to be spending it on certain things like healthcare and the like, and, you know, pharmaceuticals to reduce the price. But they don't ever reduce the price by spending. Somebody else is paying for it, right?
Exactly. When you subsidize something, it doesn't actually make it cheaper.
No.
A person pays less, and then completely a different set of people pay more.
Exactly. I mean, why do they continue to say that as if it's true? You know, they come out and say, now we're going to reduce pharmaceuticals. Well, you know they're not. In fact, I would venture to tell you that the involvement of the government in the pharmaceutical industry is one of the reasons the prices are so high anyway.
You're absolutely right. And the reason they do it is because it sells. The best we can do is educate people to what's going on.
Yeah, and I know you guys try to do that, but we have some reason for being optimistic. The Fed is hiking interest rates. It means that my mortgage payment's going to go up again. I'm sure. It's going to slow down the purchase of different things. What about the supply chain thing here, Ryan? Have you noticed? Are the shelves getting stocked a little better now, or is it still pretty bad?
There's plenty of room for improvement, but there's not much the President or Congress can do about it. What they can do is lift trade barriers to help unclog ports. Local and state governments can do the same with their ports.
Mm-hmm.
There are all kinds of trucking regulations in place, but none of those have to do with inflation because they don't have anything to do with the number of dollars in circulation. So it's a separate issue. So the Inflation Reduction Act, unless it touches those, it's not going to touch any of that.
Yeah, right. We're talking with Ryan Young. He's a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He's an expert on regulatory reform and trade policy and antitrust issues. And he's written a piece on their website about how the Consumer Price Index gives reason for cautious optimism on inflation. So they're going into November, and I guess the Democrats are saying, well, you know, we passed this bill, therefore we've had a win, and let's all be excited. I'm not sure that people, you know, the common man out there, really is following this or even gives a darn. You know, he wants to see the prices go down. He's seen a little bit of it go down at the gas pump. Do you think the prices at the gas pump are going down because of some of this, or do you think it's because people are just slowing down their purchase of energy?
I think it's because people are adapting to the supply crunch that happened when Putin invaded Ukraine. That was the biggest reason oil prices went up in the first place, and the biggest reason they're starting to come down now to previous levels isn't because Congress did anything special. It's because people are finding workarounds to the Russian supply crunch.
You think that that Putin's actions actually was the main reason for the hike in gas?
It was up there, not just because it's...
I mean, what about Biden when he came in? When Biden came in and started shutting down the pipeline constructions at a couple of pipelines, all that's based on futures. I thought that was the main reason that the price started going up.
It didn't help, but markets already priced that in. They knew he was going to do bad things like shutting down pipelines and revoking permits. Mm-hmm. Markets had already priced that in. What Putin did was a surprise, and markets don't like surprises. And it also created uncertainty about the future.
Mm-hmm.
So the best thing Biden can do is undo the damage he did. But markets had already priced that in by the time that Putin invaded.
Well, let's look at it this way. When Trump left office, the price of gasoline was, I don't recall, you may know better than me, but it started to go up as soon as Biden came in. And it was based on the futures, the speculation of the what the cost would be. But Biden was, you know, was down on fossil fuels. He was down on, you know, the pipelines. He was down on fracking. They were going to come back with more regulations, were they not? Wasn't that the major reason that the gas prices went up?
That was one of the reasons. Putin was another. And then one reason that I don't think gets nearly enough attention is that when COVID hit and people really did stop buying gas.
Yes, that's true.
We had a super low starting point. I mean, I'd seen prices that I hadn't seen since I was a teenager in the 90s. It was wonderful. I mean, the trade-off, my goodness, not worth it.
Yeah.
But well, when people started buying gas again, prices were on their way back to where they were before. Biden made things worse, and then the Putin shock made things worse still. So we had a triple whammy.
Yeah. So you're optimistic. You think that it might be 6 months at the minimum that we'll really start to see these rates get back to some sort of normality, or what do you think?
Normality. Boy, nice.
There's no such thing. I know it, but I mean, let's put it this way: are we ever going to get back to the prices? Let's say before Biden took office, for you know, a gallon of milk or a gallon of gasoline.
Well, big picture inflation, I think it'll get down to its normal rate maybe a year from now, maybe a touch longer. It's going to go down slowly, slowly, slowly in baby steps.
Mm-hmm.
As far as things like oil prices and food prices and supply chain problems, those don't have to do with the money supply. So those are kind of at the mercy of outside circumstances, as well as the many bad policy decisions being made in Washington. So I'm optimistic about monetary inflation. I'm wait and see on the other side.
Yeah. Now, regulations, and these are the things that stifle businesses, of course, are the extended regulations that slow down the creation of the product. Let's be honest. It also, as you know, slows down entrepreneurship, people wanting to get into businesses. They're intimidated by these regulations. And yet here they come, you know, and the Democrats are great at adding regulations. One of the things about Trump, I think, that helped the economy was the fact that he was cutting back to a large extent on regulations of different industries. Your thought on that?
Yeah, there's much more to do. The problem is that Trump did most of his actions via executive order, which mm-hmm. can be undone as soon as there's a party change, and that's exactly what happened. If we want to make those kinds of reforms permanent, Congress has to pass them in legislation.
True.
Next time the GOP gains power, that's what they need to do. Don't worry about the executive. Focus on Congress.
Yeah, if they can get enough votes, right? And pass passed the in the Senate passed 60 votes. Otherwise, it doesn't go anywhere. So that's, you know, Biden did the same thing. He couldn't get 60 votes. He decided he'll use executive privilege. But you're right. It's a it's actually a perversion of his job, both of them, using the executive privilege to create laws, basically, right?
Yeah, and the other thing they need to focus on is not so much on getting rid of this or that bad regulation, but focus on the larger system that keeps producing them. More than 3,000 new regulations come out every year on top of what we already
have. Oh, boy.
And the whole thing costs almost $2 trillion per year. We have a lot of work to do on that.
Yeah, exactly. Ryan, let's be honest. How many people read the Inflation Reduction Act before they voted on it? Nobody.
I would say somewhere between zero.
So nobody reads it. Nancy Pelosi didn't read it. Nobody read it. Then they didn't give the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, time to come out with their reading on whether or not it was really going to reduce inflation, right? I mean, this thing was just shoved through because they want, apparently they wanted a victory before November. Is that it?
That's exactly it, and that's also one reason why they pushed out all these fiscal discipline measures to 2027 and later.
Yeah.
So if every bill has some
back-ended
medicine mixed in.
When a lot of them will be out.
Sugar is happening right now with the extra spending, and then all the medicine with the tax hikes and all the other austerity measures. Those aren't going to happen until 2027.
Well, not only that.
By other things, too.
Not only that, some of that can be nullified, right? The back-ending stuff that's supposedly going to lower costs and the like, or spending and government spending, you know, that back-ended kind of thing, that's a little tricky thing too, isn't it?
It is, and it's also standard practice, has been in Washington for decades.
Terrible. Well, Ryan, as always, I really appreciate you coming on and talking about this very much. It's so important. And I like the optimism. I'm hoping you're right and that we're on our way to reducing this inflation in the long run. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Paul.
Okay. Ryan Young. All right, we're going to take our break. And when we come back, the FBI may have grabbed some privileged information in that raid. We're going to take a little bit of a deeper look and got some other things to talk about as well, including a college professor of peace who endorsed the murder of Salman Rushdie.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, this is Steve Vacara, psychologist and host of the Chapters Wrap Live. Each live show will bring on top-notch guests from the nonprofit world. We are the advocacy show that provides a platform for other advocates. So please tune in on your drive home from work to share your voice. The Chapters Wrap, where unity and diversity meet one chapter at a time.
Listen to Kicking Unhealthy Relationships to the Curb at 5, Voices for Change at 6, Reach Out with Ray and Steve at 7, and the Chapters Wrap at 8, Wednesdays, here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
What's the buzz in Tampa Bay? Senior Voice America Radio, a unique morning variety program delivering the latest commentary on politics by host and political analyst Tim Bryce and the up-to-minute happenings of Wall Street. Beyond politics and finance, they scale the scholar's rampart by including topics on religion and nutrition with thought-provoking guests and interviews. Tune in every weekday from 8 to 10 a.m. on this Tan Talk station. Senior Voice America, serving our nation's seasoned citizens for over four decades.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back. Freedom Works on a Monday. Hey, you know who we have on the line? Our eye in the northern sky. Angelo Ceresi is with us, and Angelo's good to talk with you. What's going on, my friend? Anything in particular?
Yeah, let's see. Governor Hochul's up to her stuff again, you know.
New York governor.
Stuff.
Yep. Yep. What's she doing these days to get under your skin?
Giving away the store, you know, and going to infringe on her Second Amendment rights. So all this stuff comes September with her new laws that she signed in.
Now, is she up for election?
Yes, she is.
Okay. Do you know who the Republican primary has the primary taken place yet for the governorship?
Yes, it has.
Okay. Who's going to be the Republican?
Congressman Zeldin, Lee Zeldin.
Lee Zeldin? Okay.
Lee Zeldin.
Zeldin.
He was attacked a couple of weeks ago by...
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You're in the Rochester area, yeah.
Okay. All right. So you're going to be behind that that
Governor
gentleman.
Zeldin, yes.
Okay.
Well, I'm still calling him governor. I hope he wins.
What do you think his chances are?
Well, from what I've seen so far, he's leading in upstate New York.
Mm-hmm.
But down in New York City, it's a battle. He's down. So now, it's New York City that...
I would think that a Republican might have a big shot this time around in New York.
Hopefully. If ever we're going to take it back, now's the time.
Now's the time. I think people are fed up with a lot of things. Even New York Cityites must see, you know, with all the crime that's going on and all of these other things, not just that you directly blame the governor, but the economy.
Well, the laws that the assembly does, you know, the state senate,
mm-hmm.
the state assembly, the laws that they passed, plus it's a sanctuary city.
Right. So, well, some of that will rub off then on Hochul, right?
Yes, hopefully, because, I mean, you know, it's like they're... Governor Abbott from Texas, he's sending the illegal immigrants up here.
Yeah, how do you like that?
and then they're complaining. They're the ones that are talking about being the sanctuary city, right?
So the governors of Arizona and Texas are continuing to busload up to New York City, also Washington, D.C.
Yes.
But it's only a handful of people compared to the ones that are crossing the border down there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But this is what's happening in our area,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then some people I talk to, they're fed up with what happened with the FBI raiding former presidents, Mar-a-Lago.
What do you think about that raid? We were talking a little earlier about it that there might have been some attorney-client privileged documents that the FBI took in the scoop. I mean, it's like they came in with a huge not bulldozer, but whatever that thing is that just scoops everything up and takes it out, you know.
Yeah. I would say it's all politically motivated. They don't want him to run. Mm-hmm. We know that. You can see that clearly, you know. And, you know, what they've done is wrong. I mean, totally wrong. They've never done it to anybody else. But, you know, and Merrick Garland, he's a farce as it comes to Attorney General.
Do you think this is going to backfire and make Trump even more appealing?
I hope so. I it looks like it is, but I mean, you know, if you go on the internet, all you see is bad stuff from Microsoft, right? MSNBC, all this stuff is trashing Trump. This AIDS, they keep saying, you know, all this misinformation, lies that they say about President Trump, you know, and then they feed this stuff to the people.
I think people are even people that might not like Trump, I think maybe in his corner on this one. To raid your house like they did. To take everything that they could cart out of the house. I mean, they know that this was not the same deference given to Hillary Clinton or even for Barack Obama with some of the things he took out.
I was talking to an individual last night, and this person actually believes the stuff that they fed him with the Russian collusion and everything like that.
He still believes it?
He still believes it. That's what I don't understand. I mean, it's been in the news that it was all false and everything like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, once they get it under their skin, you know, it's hard to shake it out. I mean, especially if they hate Trump.
I can't understand what it is about these people. I mean, if you had half a brain, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to see what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the American people believe this stuff. It's unbelievable. Totally unbelievable. He's afraid that he's going to be such an authoritarian. Just, what do you think we have now?
I know. It's that derangement syndrome of Trump, right? I mean, if people don't like Trump, it's very hard to sanction even the things they might normally like because they don't like him.
Right.
Shoot the messenger.
Right. These are the people that are taking away your Second Amendment rights. I says, here in New York State, in the next couple of weeks, Hochul signed into law this thing that, you know, you have sensitive areas where there's children. You cannot leave your house without with that firearm because every area has children in it. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
She's just about...
That takes care of that.
That takes care of our permits. Our
right.
Pistol permits. I mean, and these are the people that are the authoritarians. They're the ones that, you know, like the Nazis, take away your firearms, ban the books. These people took down statues during the 2020 election, trying to change the history of our country. It's just Trump didn't do that. And I don't understand how the American people can feed into this.
Remember Charlottesville? They tried to accuse him of trying to take sides with white supremacists.
Yeah.
He never did that.
I mean, anybody with half a brain, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to see all this stuff.
Right. We're talking with Angelo Ceresi from Rochester, New York. We call him our eye in the northern sky. Angelo, this is the one-year anniversary of the withdrawal from
Afghanistan.
Do you have any thoughts on that 1 year later?
Yeah. I mean, and we still have people that are still over there, correct?
Oh, gosh, yes.
And he hasn't tried, and they're keeping it quiet.
Remember that we pulled the military basically out of there before we tried to pull the civilians out.
Right, right. And we lost 13 military personnel because of that.
There was that bombing.
Mm-hmm.
There was about 40 people, 55 people were killed, including 13 military.
And they don't say nothing about it, do they?
And then we somehow decide to send everybody through the main airport where... the enemy or the Taliban was hanging around instead of the other one that we had a stronger security control with. Remember that?
Yep. And now Afghanistan is a sanctuary for who now? The same people.
Al-Qaeda.
Right? Al-Qaeda.
They've come right back in.
They're right back in.
It seems like it's like, what is it? How the, it just disappears, you know, and it's the same as it was before, like water over sand. I don't know.
It's just like when I was in Vietnam, you go to take an area.
As soon as you leave, it swallows it up again. It's the same.
The VC, the Viet Cong, and the NVA were right back there.
Right.
I mean, these people don't learn. I don't get it.
I did hear an interesting point made about the war in Afghanistan. I think it was this morning. Somebody in a call-in show said, you know, the reason that we weren't going to win that war is because the people of Afghanistan themselves didn't want to fight. It's like in the Ukraine, the reason that Russians just didn't come right in and take over things is that the Ukrainians were fighting for their country and for their lives, but not in Afghanistan, you know?
Yeah.
If the people of Afghanistan themselves aren't going to take up the fight, how is a group that's coming in for just a temporary period of time, you know, with soldiers,
right?
How are they going to win, you know, against those forces?
If you don't fight to win, right?
Yeah, but if you don't have the people themselves in the country behind you.
Right. Just like in World War II, they had the partisans in France, right, to resist.
The people in France wanted we're fighting for their lives and their country.
Right.
And this is not the case, though, with that was the point, that nobody seems to be able to win a war in Afghanistan because they never get the people to back what they're doing.
Right, right. If you're just subtle about it, and whoever said that is probably 100% correct.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yep. Now, another thing maybe I'll ask you about is there's been a big push again with the climate change activists. They are ramping up their actions. In recent months, the far-left activists, they've glued themselves to paintings. They've disrupted pipelines. They have blocked rush hour traffic. They've scaled buildings. Some have set themselves on fire. There's a lot of this going on right now. Do you have any comment on the climate change people?
Yeah, go back to the basics. You know, the climate change, do they think the world is going to end? I mean, are we supposed to take up the mantle and do it without, like, China not doing it, Russia not doing it, all these other countries, India not doing it? We have to do it all the time?
Well, that's the thing, you know. We're not going to get very far if we're the only ones, right?
Right. It's not good. Climate change isn't going to happen. Look at our own country now. The automobile industry. They want to do electric vehicles are pushing all that stuff now.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're just crazy people that just, you know, it's just like these fanatics that don't like Trump. They got it in their head that the world is going to end, and if they don't do anything about it, you know, what's going to happen?
Right.
The Earth keeps changing constantly. I mean, at one time we had the Ice Age, right?
I don't know. I wasn't old enough.
But you still got the Great Lakes to prove it.
Yeah, we do. Yes.
Right?
Yes, you're right.
And the glaciers, so that it warmed up.
I remember in the 80s they were talking about having another Ice Age.
Back then, yes.
No, they really were. Even the headlines in the papers. We did a show on it one time, talking about how all the papers were pushing the fact that our climate was going to get colder.
Now it's going to get warm.
Now it's going to get warm. Then it was going to get warmer. Now it's just called climate change. That way, if it gets colder, you can blame people. And if it gets warmer, you can blame people.
Well, remember in the 80s when that volcano exploded there?
Yeah, Mount Hood.
Mm-hmm. They were saying that the cloud is going to produce, the world's going to get colder now.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, it's always
getting warmer.
Yeah. Always a pleasure to talk with you, Angelo. Let's make let's continue the routine every Monday.
Okay, sounds good to me.
All right, my friend. Again. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Take
okay,
care.
Sure. Our eye in the northern sky, Angelo Ceresi. He will continue on with us. All right, going to take a break. When we come back, there's a professor at Oberlin College called the Professor of Peace. I don't know if I think he's still there. He endorsed the murder of Salman Rushdie. We are going to talk about it.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back for the final segment of Freedom Works. Thank you for listening. We're here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, here on the Tantalk Radio Network. And we know it's you're out and about quite a bit. Maybe you're listening on the car radio right now. But if you can't listen, thanks to Big Ed, we've got all of our programs on podcast, which means you can go to our website and then you can click on the podcast button. And he's got all our shows all the way back. You'll see the latest ones at the top. You'll see the top 10 that we do and the guests, the whole bit. Go to ourfreedomworks.com, O-U-R. OurFreedomWorks.com, and away you go. All right, so you've heard about that horrible attack of author Salman Rushdie the other day. He may lose an eye. I think it sounds to me like he's going to survive this attack, but he was stabbed numerous times, including, I think, in the neck. An Islamic studies academic dubbed the Professor of Peace, at Oberlin College in Ohio, endorsed the campaign to assassinate Salman Rushdie. His name is Hadi Matar. He's 24. Oh, I'm sorry. That's not correct. The alleged assassin is Hadi Matar, a 24-year-old man who stabbed Rushdie in the neck and in the liver during a speech in Chautauqua, New York. There is this, if I can find it here, this guy that is a from Oberlin College. He, I'm trying to find his name here, Muhammad Jafar Mahalati. He's an Iranian scholar. He's a former diplomat. He's teaching now at Oberlin College. And he said, I think all Islamic countries agree with Iran. All Islamic nations and countries agree that any blasphemous statements against sacred figures should be condemned. He said, I think if Western countries really believe and respect freedom of speech, they should also respect our freedom of speech. We certainly use that right in order to express ourselves, our religious beliefs, in the case of any blasphemous statements against sacred Islamic figures. Well, freedom of speech does not entail you to take a knife and start stabbing somebody because you don't agree with what they're saying. I think he's kind of trashed freedom of speech. I'm wondering how long this guy is going to stay at Oberlin College. If I were the president of Oberlin College, I think I would have kicked him out by now, at least suspended him. Well, we'll see where that goes. In the meantime, I want to ask you, Ed, before we get to our top 10 in a few minutes, football is back. I'm not even sure if the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have played one of their an exhibition game yet, but if they have, let me know about it. And secondly, is Tom Brady still on the roster?
They did play Saturday night. I was there, and they lost to the Dolphins 26-24.
They did?
Yeah, and I talked to some of my colleagues in the media, and everybody's got their conspiracy theory as to why Brady's taking 10 days off. He is on the roster. He's listed as the number
one.
So
he wasn't there?
No. We made jokes that maybe he was in one of the sky suites with a mustache and a hat and long hair or something like that that snuck in and watched the game, but he's not been seen. So we don't know. He was supposedly just... He had personal reasons to take off, and this was agreed to before he signed to come back, that he needed those 10 days off.
This is might be much ado about nothing.
And people are speculating, is it a family member with an illness? But why would you know a month ago?
You wouldn't know ahead of time.
Or actually, it was 3 months ago when he signed. So but one of the players slipped up and said, we're praying for him.
Oh, that doesn't
sound
good.
So I don't know. We don't know.
You think he might have a health issue?
No, I don't think it's him. It could
be somebody in the family.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Now, when is he due back?
He will be back after this Sunday's. After this, he'll probably be on the field a week from today. In other words,
okay, he'll miss the next.
He's going to miss the next game.
Exhibition
game.
Okay.
And then he'll be back on the field on Monday.
So. Okay. Getting back to the game itself, we've had an opportunity, I trust, to have seen some of the backup quarterback work.
You just don't know. It's just preseason games.
You
is
never
just
know.
Such a joke.
Well, you know, they want to try. You can understand that. They want to try different things, and they want to really watch the people they don't know much about.
I just feel bad for the people that are paying $150, $200 for a seat. Watch that crap.
Yes, I understand that. Speaking about that, did they have a good crowd?
Well, it was deemed a sellout. I mean, the season is sold out. When you buy season tickets, it includes preseason games.
Was it shown locally?
Sure. It was Channel 8.
Yeah. Oh, I missed the whole thing. Wow. Okay. Very interesting. All right, Ed. Enough about that. It's time for our top 10. And I think this is kind of interesting. The top 10 heaviest presidents. By weight. And again, we don't know if it was before when they started or when they ended. I would suspect they'd lose weight in the job. But
I would think so, too.
Yeah, from the tension and all that?
Yeah.
Okay, this comes from POTUS, POTUS.com. Top 10 heaviest presidents. Number 10, George H.W. Bush. And now he was...
H?
Yeah, the older guy.
Really?
Yeah, he weighed 109. Listen to this. Remember, he was very tall.
Sure.
He was about 6'3". But he looked slender. He looked slender to me.
Slender to me.
But you know what? He might have had a little pot belly at some point. Anyway, 196 pounds. Okay? 196. Wow. All right, number nine. James Buchanan. He's out of the 1800s, I think. 198 pounds. Must have been a big guy. Number eight. William McKinley. He was assassinated early in his tenure. 199 pounds. Mm-hmm. Number seven, Lyndon Baines Johnson. Now, he was a big guy, Lyndon Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
200 pounds even. 200 pounds even. Number six, Theodore Roosevelt. He was like at the turn of the century around 1900, 19. In fact, I think he might have succeeded either Garfield or McKinley. Anyway, he was 210 pounds. Number five. Would you believe number five is Bill Clinton?
Yes.
Bill Clinton.
He was heavy when he was in
chubby,
office.
Kind of chubby, yeah.
Yeah, because they called him Bubba a lot.
They did.
He was heavy when he was in office.
I thought Bubba was not Bubble, but it was Bubba.
No, Bubba means Bubba, big guy.
Big guy. 223 pounds. Yeah, 223. Number four.
I mean, I wouldn't call him fat. He was tall. Yeah, he was tall.
Yeah, but he wasn't real fella. Thin. Yeah. Number four is Chester A. Arthur, one of the most important presidents we've ever had. I don't know a thing about him, really. 224 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I was just a pound more than Bill. Number three, Donald Trump.
Yeah, I figured Trump had to be
in there
somewhere.
Donald Trump was in there, right?
Yeah.
Now, he's a big guy.
Yeah.
I don't care how long his suit coat is. He's a big guy.
Sure.
You ever see a picture of him out in the golf course?
Yeah. Yeah.
He looks like Jackie Gleason.
Yeah.
239 pounds. 239 pounds. All right. Number two. Grover Cleveland. Grover Cleveland. He was an 1880s president. 260 pounds. He was a big guy. Big guy. All right, Ed, do you want to take it, Gander?
I don't know.
This guy was so fat that I'm not surprised. I mean, you see pictures of this guy, and you can say, oh, my God.
I don't know. I have no clue.
William Howard Taft.
Okay.
340 pounds. 340 pounds. Now, that guy was in the 1800s.
That'll fill out
a
chair.
Can you imagine how big he was? Yes, indeed.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, that was a lot. We're going to do, by the way, on our next show, we're going to do the top 10 lightest president, so that might be interesting as well, right? See who the skinny ones were. But anyway, we got a few seconds left. I don't know if I was gonna. Oh, I can ask you real quickly. And we've talked about the Rays, and they seem to be just kind of going back and forth.
Well, they took two out of three against Baltimore.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But Baltimore isn't.
But they almost had a perfect game last night too.
Oh, they did.
Yes, yeah, almost perfect. Got to the ninth inning, and they gave up a run. I mean, a perfect game, not a hitless game.
No walks,
perfect,
nothing.
Nothing.
Till the ninth?
Ninth inning.
Who was the pitcher, do you recall?
Rasmussen.
Well, good for him. Yeah. All right. We're going to be back on Wednesday. In the meantime, remember, freedom works.
Her hair falls perfectly without her trying. She's so beautiful. Tell her every day.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM